This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertz, the General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 127, Wesley Crusher's Magic Vortex. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me this week is Philip Gilfus. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including an Oscar nomination for Into Darkness, the addition of the Next Generation cast to Star Trek Las Vegas, a secretly filmed fan-made documentary, the next feature-length TNG Blu-ray release, and, at last, the full details on the Enterprise Season 4 Blu-ray extras. Plus, we remember Filmation founder and Star Trek The Animated Series director Hal Sutherland. Then in the feature, we're joined by Charlene Schmidt and Tyler Johnson to discuss the TNG episode Remember Me. So let's step into the Ready Room. Philip, hey, I'm ready to do the news, but where's everyone? Why are you the only person here?
What do you mean? Chris, it's been the two of us the whole time. How else would it be?
I guess that's perfectly logical to you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just the two of us to do news for the whole network.
That's how it's always been on the Ready Room.
I guess. All right. Well, since you're here, we'll talk about Star Trek news today. And then later on, you know, if we can get other people back, we'll talk about Remember Me in the future. And hopefully we won't be going as crazy as Beverly.
I'll just have to figure out which chair I want to sit in here.
Right. There's a lot of empty ones, right? All right. No. So, yeah, playing a little bit off of our feature today to start the news. But we're here. And, Philip, I'm glad you're with me today because we talked about, I think it was actually last week on the show, we talked about this guy in North Carolina on the city council who resigned in Klingon. And because you yourself have actually served as an elected official in the great state of North Carolina, I have to ask you, firsthand, what's going on over there?
Yes, the old North State. Yes, this gentleman lives outside of Charlotte. I'm sure everyone's heard of Charlotte. A small town, or a smaller town called Indian Trail. Yeah, he resigned in Klingon. He seems an interesting fellow. I mean, I think only a Varul would actually send in a note like that. But I usually use Federation standard for most of my communications when I was in office.
Okay, I'm sure that your colleagues appreciated that very much.
Yes.
Yeah. I was just worried, you know, because of him resigning in Klingon, we've got J.G. Hertzler being elected in New York. There are Klingons popping up everywhere, and I was afraid that maybe North Carolina, like there could be some activity going on there. It's like a hotbed of the prelude to invasion that we don't know about, and you might have some information on it.
Oh, I wouldn't know anything about that. I mean, no, I don't know.
Why are you winking right now?
Though I will say you have not really understood Star Trek until you have read it in the original North Carolinian.
Okay. That makes sense. All right. Well, how's everything going, Philip? It's been a while since you were on here to co-host with me.
Yeah, no, things have been going great. Been enjoying time with my boys, you know, with Earl Grey and Next Generation. Been in rehearsal with a bunch of plays. I'm in two productions coming up next month. So just enjoying life, the new year, and seeing what 2014 brings.
Cool. What productions are you in?
I'm in a very, very, very small role in A To Kill a Mockingbird. Okay. But then I'm in we have every 3 or 4 months, there's one of the local places around here does an evening of one acts where local playwrights just do one acts. And so I'm in one of those plays with a few other people. So yeah, much cool. Like Dr. Crusher, I like to get on stage every now and then.
Yeah.
No dancing though.
That's right. No dancing. Okay. No tap dance lessons. All right. Too bad. All right, well, let's jump into news, and unfortunately, we do have to start the show again this week by remembering someone we've lost from the Star Trek family. Last week, we had three people because we had taken a long break over the holidays, and a lot had happened, and now, this past week, we found out that Hal Sutherland passed away. Now, Hal Sutherland was the co-founder of Filmation Studios and the director of pretty much every episode of the animated series. He's the man behind the animated Star Trek, the sort of missing series, the reason why I say on the Ready Room we talk about all five live-action Star Trek series, because there is a sixth series out there.
That's right. And you know, people can talk about the animated series, whether they, you know, enjoy it or they make fun of it or enjoy it ironically or whatever. But I mean, there's no denying, A, that it kept the franchise alive, you know, after the original series and, you know, the syndication. But animated series kept Star Trek alive and kept it going until the motion picture. So there's certainly a debt we owe to all those who continued that going.
And, you know, even beyond Star Trek, for me, with Hal Sutherland, if I think back to my childhood, I think back to Saturday mornings, especially at my grandmother's house, watching cartoons. Hal Sutherland had such an influence on the material that I took in as a kid growing up. I mean, he, together with Norm Prescott and Lou Scheimer, they founded Filmation together, and they were responsible for a lot of the cartoons that we watched when we were growing up. The Batman Superman Hour, you know, Aquaman, Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids, The New Adventures of Flash Gordon. I mean, these were things that you know, I certainly watched as a kid.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, at least for a lot of us, nothing really kind of means childhood than the cartoons you would watch early in the morning. And, you know, just you and, I don't know, maybe it was just me. Just, you know, you get that cereal bowl and watching cartoons. Actually, wait, that was me yesterday. But I mean, when I was a kid, though, still, I mean, I think you never forget what you saw and what your cartoons were that got you so excited.
Yeah. And you still want to watch them today, you know, at least I do. My wife and I are like that. You know, if we see one of the old shows we used to watch, you know, Pink Panther, anything like that, you've got to turn it on. So it's really sad to see Hal Sutherland pass away. There aren't very many details about what happened. We don't know how old he was even. I've not been able to find that information. And we don't know how he died. We just know that he did pass away. They made an announcement on the Filmation Facebook page. And I guess that shows social media for you, right? Now we're announcing that people died on Facebook pages, but it happened. So now all the founders of Filmation have passed away. Prescott passed away in 2005. Scheimer passed away last year in October. And now Hal Sutherland's gone. So if you haven't seen the animated series, it's definitely something that I think all Star Trek fans should watch. You may not love it. There is one episode, Yesteryear, which has kind of become a legend and has been referenced both in the live-action series and in the literature. Some elements of that have become canon by being referenced in the series, in the films, in the books. But yeah, go check it out. So really sad to see Hal Sutherland pass away. And we send our condolences to his family and everyone left behind.
Yeah, and that's something we definitely, talking later in the future about, you know, the people that we lose, you have to remember what's left behind. And so Star Trek, the animated series, is something that's left behind. And so people need to queue it up on Netflix and give it a watch.
Yeah, that's a good point, because it is on Netflix now. So you don't have to go out and get the little DVD set. Just pull it up on Netflix. All right, Philip. Well, let's jump into some other news. And we have a few quick items here up front. And one of them is the fact that Star Trek Into Darkness has been nominated for an Oscar. And the category is visual effects. How do you feel about this?
Oh, the way you said it, I was about to wager $200.
That's right.
You know, it's interesting. It's always, you know, Star Trek, the franchise, just has a weird relationship with awards, you know.
Yeah.
You know, Sir Patrick, you know, just to pick up my TNG, of course, you know, never recognized for any nominations or awards or anything. But here we are with getting the visual effects category, you know, which, you know, it certainly makes very much sense Into Darkness. Yeah. So they do have some heavies, though, in this category, looking at it, though. I'm not a can't say I've seen all of them, but you got the other ones of Gravity and the second Hobbit movie, and Iron Man 3 and The Lone Ranger. And I feel ashamed to admit this. I did not see Gravity yet, but from what I hear, that's going to probably be the one to beat. But I don't know. What do you think, Chris?
Well, I haven't seen all these either. I'm pretty sure that The Lone Ranger will not be winning this award in this category, just from what I know of that film so far. You mentioned the weird relationship with awards, and there was the one. It's like the golden moment for Star Trek was, it was 1994, I believe, right? When Star Trek The Next Generation was nominated for an Emmy for Best Drama. Nothing special, not any weird, you know, side category. It was
makeup,
Best Drama.
Lighting.
And The X-Files was also nominated that year as well. And when that happened, I thought, like, maybe these academies are finally going to accept science fiction for being proper drama. And unfortunately, if you want to get nominated as a science fiction show these days, you still pretty much have to be something like Lost, where the majority of the audience doesn't really think about the fact that they're watching science fiction. And Star Trek, just, you know, when it comes to something like the Oscars or the Emmys, it's always these specialty categories, which is too bad. Now, I'm not saying that Into Darkness should be nominated for Best Drama at the Oscars or anything. I'm not going there, but I do think that Star Trek deserves nominations and awards in many categories over the years that they just were never even put into the running for, because they're science fiction shows. As for this one, I mean, I completely agree with the nomination. I think Into Darkness had some spectacular visual effects. I've watched all of the extras on the Blu-rays, which I talked about on here last week, and seeing the work that went on behind the scenes, really amazing stuff. As for whether or not they'll win, I don't know. You know, it's different too. You know, you look at something like The Hobbit, and yes, there are visual effects in there that are very different. It's kind of hard to compare the effects in a movie like that with the effects in a movie like Iron Man 3 or Into Darkness. So who knows who will win? My feeling is that Star Trek will not win the award because, you know, we never win the award.
And I think my fear would be if Into Darkness did win the award for visual effects, accepting the award would be a CGI R2-D2, which would be just very controversial. And I think probably just would set the fans aflame. So maybe it's just as well. But it's good to be nominated. Maybe.
No, accepting the award would be that nurse from the first JJ movie with the gigantic bulging eyes.
Yes.
But we'll see. The Oscars are going to be announced on March 2nd. So good luck to Star Trek. I do hope they win the award. I do think they deserve to win the award. And it would be nice to bring another statue home for the franchise. Now, next item up here, Philip, is something that should get you pretty excited. Are you planning to go to Star Trek Las Vegas this year?
Oh, goodness. not currently, unless, you know, the Grand Nagus visits and drops a bunch of latinum in my pocket here. But I have been, and I want to say I've been to a convention in Las Vegas. I don't know if it was like Star Trek Vegas then, but it was in the early 2000s because I remember seeing Kate Mulgrew there and some others. So I don't know if it was as big as it is now. But, you know,
yeah, it seems to get bigger and bigger every year.
Yeah, yeah. And I certainly, I mean, as you said, the TNG cast, you know, sans Sir Patrick will be there, but so far Jonathan Frakes, Brent Spiner, Michael Dorn, Marina Sirtis, LeVar Burton, and Gates McFadden. So, you know, everyone you would want to see from The Next Generation. And then I mean I'm almost afraid to read the laundry list of everyone else, of course, in Trekdom from all the other series, live series.
Yeah, Mares is going to be there. Mares and A-Rex are going to be having a panel for those who are fans of the animated series.
Yes. So no, I mean, that's definitely, you know, I think at this point, you know, Star Trek Vegas may be the current mecca of Star Trek. You know, you have to do your not to be sacrilegious, but you have to do your pilgrimage at least once in your lifetime here to Star Trek Vegas. So, you know, yeah. If you haven't been once, certainly it's something to aspire to. So I hope to go, if not this year, soon.
Without going through the whole list of every star who's going to be there, you know, many people were already previously announced. One person who was previously announced, as we talk about, you know, really getting the whole TNG cast together, is Susie Plaxton. Because in the episode we're going to talk about today, they do call out Dr. Sellar's name, even though she's not in the episode. So Susie's there too. So all you Sellar fans.
You know, she is everywhere.
She is everywhere.
She is. She, you know, Jeffrey Combs is the female Suzanne, or maybe it's the other way around. I don't know. But.
She is the female Jeffrey Combs.
He is everywhere.
Now, of course, the question the fans are going to want to know, if she does appear to panel, will she have a puppy?
I love that line. The puppy. In the queue in the gray, yes.
And she'll surprise one male panelist with a surprise son they never knew about.
So Star Trek Las Vegas this year is going to be July 31st through August 3rd. It is once again at the Rio. And you can take in the whole cast, as you said, sans Patrick Stewart. But I have a feeling that by the time we get to July, like sometime in July, they're going to announce that they have secured Patrick Stewart to appear as well, and we'll get the whole cast together. I have a feeling.
Now, I believe it was my co-host Daniel Prue who had the good plan that somehow to convince Ian McClellan to go to this,
yes.
And that since they're attached at the hip, Sir Patrick would join him.
Exactly. That is the best plan. Good thinking, Daniel. And once they're there, even if you can't get to Las Vegas, you'll be able to follow all their escapades on Instagram.
I think they just have an, everywhere they go, there's a musical montage of them doing things. So,
yes. All right. So stay tuned on this one. We'll keep you updated as more news comes out about Star Trek Las Vegas. And this next item, Philip, when I saw this, I said, okay, this may have happened in 1988, but the news is just now coming out. Philip is co-hosting with me. We have to talk about this. This is a story. It's a video that has appeared on YouTube, a 32-minute video. It's kind of gone viral. This guy named Captain Stone, apparently two fans broke onto the set of Star Trek The Next Generation in 1988 to film their own little personal documentary. And they were actually able to climb onto the sick bay bio bed. They got some of the lights and control panels to come on the set. And what I wanted to ask you was, first off, have you seen the video? And secondly, if you, and I'm guessing your cohorts from Earl Grey, if the three of you guys snuck onto the set to film a documentary, what would you do?
Okay, well, I have seen the video, Chris, and I have to say it is... Oh, goodness. I definitely, all the listeners, please watch the video. And you have to stick with it because it is kind of slow going. But there's a wonderful shot. And I actually had the minute mark for you, but I've forgotten it. But yes, basically what it is you see these, I think there's two, you only see two people. Maybe there's three, but you see these two folks. There's Captain Stone, who is dressed in a season one fan uniform, which I am amused by that. He's basically trying to like, okay, let's smuggle into the transport. Okay, you shot. I'll be on the transport. I'll beam in. Do you got the camera right? Do you got the camera? Are you zooming in? Are you zooming out? Are you zooming in? And the interplay, like he does not act like a Starfleet captain with the words he uses with his cameraman. We do not use those words. But it is just crazy, especially because, you know, I know our listeners can't see me. But I probably have more hair than this gentleman does, who's Captain Stone. And yet every shot he begins is my hair all right? I'm like, what hair do you have? I don't have any hair and I have more than you do. But anyway, it's kind of crazy about these two folks bringing in their 1980s video equipment, trying to take this footage. But I think one thing I'm surprised about, I would love to hear feedback from, you know, whether it's, Larry or Doug or any of the which I know some of them weren't season one, obviously, but some of the backstage people at Next Generation about just seeing these guys like fumble with it. Cause one thing I'm surprised about, you know, they go to the main engineering set, they go to the transporter room set, they go to the sick bay set, like you said, and they're just like figuring out how to get things to light up. And I think it's kind of cool because you see like with the transporter control that it actually does respond to touch. I mean, this is 1988, and I'm like, wow, that was cool. And so, you know, see the Akuta stuff, and it's very great. But the fun shot is when he tries to lay on the sick bay bed, and you have to remember season one, season two, and he has the clamshell. Of course, this is pre-clamshell, but whatever we would call season one, season two. And he tries to put it on him, and the whole thing just falls on the ground. And the clip that they're using, they run that, like, 5 seconds about six times.
So you just see it going, ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching.
I just really want to know the producer the next day going, what the heck?
Oh. You know that there's some intern on the show who got blamed for that.
But yeah, but apparently they talk
the bio bed.
like they're doing a shot. Like, where's my jacket? I think you left it in the transporter room. And they're like in the sick bay. And so I don't know. It's oh goodness. Luckily they didn't do too much damage. They actually do take a shot though of the conspiracy exploded commander. Like that prop.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. They even have a little alien right there on his shoulder. Yeah. So I definitely encourage people to see it. Now what I do. If I was accompanied by my cohorts in crime, Darren and Daniel, well, assuming we weren't doing anything illegal, because, you know, we would not want to do that to Paramount and CBS, the fine folks who make Star Trek possible, and who can certainly send us things. But what
this is purely hypothetical.
Exactly. So, exactly. Yeah. This would be in the JJ universe, right, of TNG. But we would there's just no question. Having been to the Star Trek Experience in Vegas. I mean, just me on the bridge set. I just want to be alone, just to sit in the chairs and just, you know, have my remember me moment all alone on the bridge in the center chair, you know, sit in the ops station. That's all I would want to do. That's all I need. Just give me a couple minutes.
Would you be on the bridge as well as maybe go down to 10 forward? And would you get some shots of yourself stepping over a chair to sit down the way Riker does?
Well, see, the thing is, I can sit down. I don't mind sitting in the center chair. I don't have any problems of not sitting down. So, and I don't have the beard yet. So,
so there's nothing else you would do. You're just gonna. It sounds like your video is probably not going to go viral on YouTube.
No, it's just me. I would just take the video and then watch it every day for the rest of my life. Just like I don't know where it is. It's on storage. I have a picture of me on the Experience sitting on the captain's chair. You know, it's all I need, Chris. I'm a simple man with simple needs.
See, I would go down to a cargo bay. I would set up the antimatter containment barrels that they have. I would, you know, do some kind of bowling. Like cosmic bowling with the antimatter barrels. I would
Would you have fencing?
I would do fencing. And the thing about that, now you may think like, well, who are you going to fence? Remember, Picard has that dedicated fencing officer who just hangs around so that when Picard wants to fence, he just jumps into action. That guy, you don't know this, he actually sleeps on the set. He's always there. So
he's a method actor.
If I were there, he's probably available. I just pick up a foil and go.
Yeah. And it's very interesting. He lasted until the episode Lessons. Because in the episode Lessons in 7th season, Picard does not have a fencing partner. He has to ask Riker if he wants to with him. And So, yeah, that guy did a great job.
Well, you have to watch that 8th season episode where we actually find out what happened to the fencing officer.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. Now, are you sure you want to go to the, I'm not even going to try and do the name because I would not try to do that with you, Chris. You would not go to the Kyle Will Riker fight-a-thon room?
Yeah, and have some ambojutsu. Yeah, yeah. The only thing I can say about that is when I start the battle, I'm pretty sure that I can pronounce the Japanese better than Riker did at the beginning of that.
Because
where I think he's supposed to be saying like Yoroshiku onegaishimasu, but it comes out as like Bashiru mashimashima.
Oh goodness! Yes. That's the Icarus Factor, am I thinking? Yeah, and
it is the Icarus Factor. Yes,
you know, because we never had any Andorians in TNG. But basically, that's right. A Riker fight scene. That's what we have in TNG. Yeah.
See, if I were Picard, I would have had an Andorian on standby all the time to fence with because they're going to put up a much better fight. You know, that officer was just letting Jean-Luc win all the time.
Well,
they're not going to just roll over for you.
Yeah, and he's Captain Picard. I mean, you can always go to the holodeck and fight Skeletor, you know.
Yes, that's right. All right. So, all right. Well, go watch this video if you want to see something amusing that fans do. But
don't do it at home, kids.
Right. Yeah. Don't do this yourself. But hypothetically, if you have something in mind, If you want to tell us what you would do if you were going to sneak on the set, you can always send us a message. Go over to our contact form and let us know what you would do if you snuck on the set. All right, Philip, we have one more TNG thing here as we're talking about TNG. We've talked about on the show a number of times. I'm pretty sure you and I have talked about it before when you've been on here hosting these feature-length Blu-ray releases. They've done The Best of Both Worlds, Unification, Redemption. And we kind of felt like they've run through the ones we thought were the obvious ones. And then we were thinking, like, are they going to do Time Zero? Are they going to do Gambit? Are they going to do Chain of Command? Which one are they going to do? Well, it hasn't been officially announced, but our colleague Mike from Standard Orbit and Commentary Trek Stars sent me a message, and he said, I was listening to this podcast on 5x5 called Screen Time, and they were talking to Robert Meyer Burnett, and near the end of the episode, he said that Chain of Command is going to be the feature-length Blu-ray release to go along with Season 6.
Well, I mean, you know, that makes sense. Obviously, it's a two-parter, very, very, very powerful two-parter. You have, I mean, I'm sure everyone knows this, but you have the story there of Captain Jellicoe taking command of the Enterprise. You have Picard being captured and tortured by the Cardassians. Obviously, very powerful experience. You know, there are four lights, all that, every, you know, huge thing in Next Generation. And so, you know, it does make sense. Now, is the title of the featurette going to be, Do I Call You Will or William? Is that what it's going to be called? Or or is it going to be called Get That Fish Out of This Office?
Right. Yeah, there's going to be a commentary for the episode with Jellicoe. Mm-hmm. The character himself, Jellicoe, and he's just going to be, you know, complaining about the episode all the way through.
I was watching an old episode of Dexter who had that actor playing an old serial killer. So it was very interesting to see that actor again. Yeah, I could, you know, Jellicoe, much like Riker, will just start yelling throughout the commentary.
Right. It's an interesting choice for me. I think in terms of material, like, I agree, like, Chain of Command's a very powerful episode, and it's especially the time that they did it on television. I felt like, you know, TNG, they were really tackling an issue, and they were being very upfront about the material and very powerful scenes there with Picard. I'm curious from when they decide as a studio, like, what disc are we going to put out? Because at that point it becomes an issue of marketing and sales, and should we put this one out or should we put something else out? I'm wondering if Chain of Command will have the audience that The Best of Both Worlds and Unification and Redemption had, of people who want to buy this as a feature-length episode when they're already going to be getting it on the disc set itself. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think, you know, you can't beat the There Are Four Lights quote. I mean, is there really a quote from any of those other episodes? You know, sort of the one everyone can shout. It's like watching, or maybe it's just me, it's like watching the movie Air Force One, and at the end of the movie, everyone yells, "Get off my plane!" You know, same thing here with Chain of Command.
Well, this quote is, for TNG, this is the "It's a fake" quote from DS9. There are four lights. This is the TNG quote, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, because, you know, at least on Earl Grey, there's sort of a broad agreement that we like season three as far as the best, you know, there's so much in season three, but and some people say, like, oh, well, kind of went downhill, which I don't agree, but you know, sort of gets a little harder to be like, what's the standout episode of season six? And I don't think, like you said, you know, and it'd be interesting in this featurette, you know, whether you're going to have, you know, before or after, you're going to have maybe Sir Patrick talking about Amnesty International and everything else. And also, you know, very heavy subject, but I wonder if there will be some commentary, because I can't remember when season six was. Was this pre or post Sipowicz NYPD Blue about, you know, do we show the Picard butt or not? You know, this is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
I don't recall. Yeah. Off the top of my head. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see. Again, I mean, I think that diehard TNG fans will buy it. I think the general Star Trek fans who maybe would jump on something like Best of Both Worlds or Unification, that, you know, this might be a less attractive feature length disc again, because it depends on what extras they put on it. Like you said, you know, I mean, if they can bring Patrick Stewart in and they can put some good extras on this disc, then that would be wonderful. Behind the scenes stuff that you're not going to have on the season 6 Blu-ray box set. So we'll see. But apparently, and again, this is not confirmed. This has not been officially announced at the time that we're recording this, but this is what we heard on Screen Time, where they were talking to Robert Meyer Burnett about various work and also talking about producing Blu-ray special editions as well. And that came up. So we will see.
So my question would be, for the cover art, is it going to be like a hologram where if you turn it to the left, it's Picard and the crew? If you turn it to the right, it's Jellicoe and the crew.
That would be cool if you do that. Yeah. I'm going to make sure that I put it on my shelf so that I can only see Picard the whole time. So, yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to one last news item that we have. And this is also about Blu-rays, but it's not about TNG. This is about Enterprise. A few shows ago, it was probably back before the holidays now, we mentioned the release date for Enterprise Season 4 being set. That's April 1st. And at that time, it was in December, and CBS had released the trailer for the Enterprise Season 4 Blu-ray set, but the trailer was really thin on details. You know, there was no information about what kind of extras we were going to be getting or anything like that. And so now we do have that information. And I thought we'll give you a quick rundown of what is going to be on the disc. So, Philip, looking at what's on here, first one, In Conversation, Writing Star Trek Enterprise. This is a staff reunion of pretty much everyone who worked on Season 4, except there's someone who's missing who really should be there, I think.
Oh, you mean someone who was like in charge of Season 4, maybe?
Right. For some reason, Manny Coto is not on the list. We have Brandon Braga, Mike Sussman, Andre Bormanis, David A. Goodman, Chris Black, Phyllis Strong, and Judith and Garfield Reeve Stevens, but no Manny Coto. And so I have to assume that it was just a case where, you know, they couldn't make all the schedules work out and they couldn't get Manny Coto there.
Yeah, I was listening to you talking about this the other week of they were like, you know, maybe they said it's on a Monday and it was actually on a Tuesday. It's like, no.
Right.
Everyone was fine with it. But I mean, I think that'll be interesting. I know you're a fan of this, Chris. I mean, especially being the Warp 5 host. But, you know, having the writing staff return and freely talk about Season 4. Yeah. And I know you've talked about it before, so I won't rehash it. But I think I know. I mean, I think any Star Trek fans will like this. I think Larry and others have talked about the fact that, you know, these writers are going to be able to write, you know, talk about what they want to talk about and be frank and open about what happened and what was good, what was bad, what was real.
That's what's really nice about it. And same with the TNG sets, too, how, you know, everyone is more open about talking about things now just because there's no
repercussions.
I mean, it's been so many years and there's no Star Trek on TV and everything. It's a more relaxed atmosphere right now, which is good. The other thing on here, and I think we've mentioned, you know, that this writing thing is going to be on here in the past, but the other things that are here are a 4-part documentary, and these have been fantastic. They've been doing these on the different Enterprise sets and they have been really, really good. And this one is 4 parts. It's called Before Her Time, Decommissioning Enterprise. Part 1, New Voices. Part 2, Memorable Voyages. Part 3, Final Approach. And Part 4, End of an Era. And I'm especially looking forward to that. And the other thing are some commentaries. Now, Larry and I have talked before. It was probably on Warp 5, actually, but we've talked before about some of the commentaries that were done for Enterprise for StarTrek.com back in the day. Some of them have made it onto the fan collectives. I think there's one for Regeneration anyway. And some of those got on the DVD sets, but some didn't. There is an archival commentary here for In a Mirror Darkly with Mike Sussman and Tim Gaskell. How do you feel about that episode, Philip?
Well, I actually enjoy that episode. You know, I would, you know, we've talked, or not we, but you, I know you and your fellow travelers on Warp 5 have talked about, you know, Season 4 and fan service and all that. But I, you know, as I'm not saying anything original, In a Mirror Darkly, love the new opening, the 2 parts opening. You know, love seeing them wearing the original series uniforms and all that. I thoroughly enjoy it. I know you have your opinion about, you know, where this fits or does not fit in telling a story, or at least the Enterprise story. But no, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and you know, sort of was good Star Trek candy sugar to me, and certainly would enjoy hearing more about the commentary and the crew and both the actors and the other crew getting to be on. I mean, it wasn't the Enterprise, but being on the Constitution class looking original series Enterprise in uniform.
Yeah, this will be interesting to me because, yeah, I'm mixed on the episode, but I'm glad that there's going to be a commentary with Mike Sussman because I really do want to hear firsthand from him on that. You know,
what, now, one thing I didn't see on here, they don't have the fact that, you know, they should add the these are the voyages, but it's the Mystery Science Theater 3000 version. And I think you would be there next to your two robots and you're just throwing popcorn at the screen the whole time yelling.
Well, now, as I've said on Warp 5, these are the voyages. If they had not made that the final episode of Enterprise, and if they had done that as a completely separate TV special, and they didn't have the Enterprise name on it, and they just said this is a Valentine to Star Trek, I think fans would take that episode very differently than they do. But
I have a question for you, Chris. I mean, you know, it's January, we're recording this. On Valentine's Day, will you be watching These Are the Voyages since that is the Valentine's to Star Trek?
Oh, well, of course, what I do every year. Yeah. Okay. That's my tradition, you know.
I get
Christmas, it. How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Valentine's, I watch These Are the Voyages.
Okay. Yeah. Right. I mean, I'll be watching House of Cards, but I'll think of you watching These Are the Voyages.
All right. Well, more importantly, what else we're going to get in terms of commentaries are the new commentaries. And for that, we're going to be getting a new commentary for The Forge with Judith and Garfield Reeve Stevens and Mike and Denise Okuda. The four of them will also be doing a commentary for Observer Effect. And Judith and Garfield Reeve Stevens will be joined by David Livingston for a new commentary for United. And also, this one I'm really looking forward to. Judith and Gar again, plus Andre Bormanis, Connor Trenier, and Dominique Keating doing new commentaries for both Demons and Terra Prime, which, again, I think are two of the best Enterprise episodes and two of the best episodes of Star Trek in general. And I am really looking forward to hearing what they have to say about those.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine that this was scheduled and, you know, this is going to be the great thing. But in my headcanon, I just want to imagine Connor and Dominic were just hanging out, wandering through the studio and like, hey, guys, what's going on? Oh, you're recording a commentary? Well, you want to do that, Dom? Yeah, let's do it. And then I think they also just picked these two just because what do these guys sound like without the accents? And so you're listening the whole time like, when does Connor show up? Oh, wait, that's him? But he's not saying anything about y'all or catfish or keeping my pants on. So,
well, I will say that Dominic Keating and Reed, that's him. But yeah. But yeah, Connor does the Southern twang there, which he pulls off pretty well. I think so.
And you're also
a Southerner like I am. So, yeah, I think he does a pretty good job with it, considering that he's from Washington State.
Well, and I always love the people who are always like, isn't he from Florida? But there is, like, Northern Florida is pretty, very Southern, that panhandle area. So I always find people that think that Florida's just Miami,
area.
You know, it's a big state.
Right, yeah. If you get up underneath Alabama there, yeah. So, all right. So, again, this is going to drop on April 1st. The retail price is $130, just like all the other sets, but the typical price on release day through Amazon for these Enterprise sets has been between like $57 and $65 range usually. So that's probably what you'll pay for it. And if you pre-order, then you'll get that price when it ships. You know, they're not going to charge you the full price. They'll give you the lowest price. And pre-ordering is a great way to show the studio that we want these things. And of course, with this being the final season of Enterprise, it doesn't apply to that. But we want Deep Space Nine and we want Voyager on Blu-ray. And so any way we can show the studio that there is a market for this stuff would be wonderful. Because Enterprise was easy because it was already shot in HD and the effects were done in HD as well. Deep Space Nine and Voyager are going to both require a lot of work, especially Deep Space Nine with all the battle scenes. So we need to make sure they know that we're going to buy them if they put the time and money into it.
Now, Chris, when you pre-order your Blu-rays and then you see that the final price is lower, Do you yell Dabo?
I do, yes. Absolutely do. And then I order another drink, and then I ask Lita out to dinner. So that's what I do. All right, so we'll watch for that one. And that's all we have in news today. But before we jump into the feature, which we've already teased a number of times here in news, we'd like to tell you about our sponsor for today's show, and that is Audible.com. Now, Audible is the premier source for audiobooks. They have more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and those include current bestsellers. You know, new releases, they come out. You can get the hardcover or the paperback. You know, they don't all come out in hardcover these days. But oftentimes, there's an audiobook that comes out the same day, and you'll be able to grab that right there on Audible. It's great for me because I see these new books that come out and I want to read them, but then I look at what I already have to read, everything else I have to do. I think there is no way that I have time to read this book, but all my friends are going to be talking about it. What am I going to do? Well, I grab it from Audible and I listen to it while I'm working, and that way I'm able to read a lot more than I would otherwise be able to.
Well, if you're anything like me, you're in the car listening to the dulcet tones of Christopher Jones and Matt Rushing talking on literary treks. And once you hear that page sound effect and whatever they're talking about, you know, you can't get a comic book out on Audible, but most of the other Star Trek books that they talk about there. And you listen to that, you get home, fire up the computer, go to Audible, find it on there, download. And there you go. You've already gotten the literary treks treatment. That cover has already been judged of that book, and now you're ready to listen to it yourself.
I knew you were going to bring that up. You say literary treks, where they really do judge a book by its cover. Philip, we've told you before, okay, those are news stories about the artwork, okay? It's about the artwork. So, but yeah, they have a lot of Star Trek books. Unfortunately, they don't have all the Star Trek books in audio format these days. You know, there was the kind of the golden era where they really were releasing everything, like all the big books, all the hardcovers were out there. And you talk about being in the car. I remember in the 90s, I used to ride around in my car and listen to Star Trek audiobooks on cassette tape. And that's why I'm so fond of Cetacean Ops, because I used to have Diane Duane's Dark Mirror on audio cassette, and I listen to it all the time in the car, and they actually do have Cetacean Ops in that book. So,
I mean, if you're anything like me, Chris, you were in the 90s driving your car, listening to your Lilith Fair Volume 1 on CD, maybe some Maribel by Sarah McLachlan. And after that, you know, you would want to listen to something else, you know, something, a book. And so I agree, that's where Audible comes in. And I think the great thing about Audible and Star Trek is the vast majority of the time, you're hearing Star Trek actors voicing, reading the book. And so, because these are talented folks. And so, you know, from across the Trekdom, from Majel Barrett to LeVar Burton to William Shatner, you know, all of them are definitely bring their voices to these books.
Absolutely. And you can find a lot of the Star Trek actors narrating other books as well, and in science fiction. Great science fiction short stories also that you can find on Audible. Like, go in and search the name of the actor. One, let's say you like Will Wheaton. He does a really good job with narrating, actually. And he's done several new books. But one short story he did a long time ago that's always been one of my favorites, and I think it's one of my favorites because Will Wheaton is narrating it. There's this story called Why I Left Harry's All Night Hamburgers. It's by Lawrence Watt Evans. And it's a really interesting short story about kind of parallel universes and such. And it's read by Will Wheaton. Really fantastic. I highly recommend it. But, you know, you can find your favorite voices on there as well as your favorite story. So the book I'd recommend this week is the one that I just mentioned a moment ago, which is Dark Mirror by Diane Duane. It's a really fun mirror universe story set in the TNG time period. Because TNG, unfortunately, didn't get a Mirror Universe episode. Unless you want to count Yesterday's Enterprise, that's a little bit, but it's not the same. It's not the Mirror Universe, but it does give you that kind of dark alternate timeline. Sort of a
sexy time Troy using her powers for evil. And so it's a very, very interesting book.
But Dark Mirror is a very good book, and you can get that on Audible as well. And best of all, as a Trek FM listener, you can get it absolutely free. If you go to audibletrial.com/trekfm, sign up for the trial, sign up for the Audible plan, You can choose an audiobook of your choice absolutely free. So that could be Dark Mirror or anything else that you want to choose, whether it's Star Trek or otherwise. And if you decide not to stick with Audible after the trial, that book is yours to keep. So there's nothing to lose. And by joining Audible, you'll be helping us bring the Ready Room to you every week. And you'll be getting some of the greatest books around in a format that you can take with you when you exercise, you go to work, you commute, whatever you're doing. I love Audible. I know you will too. So go over to audibletrial.com/trekafilm and sign up today. And we really thank Audible for their support of the Ready Room. And we thank you for supporting Audible. Beverly Crusher was an underused character on The Next Generation, so much so that the few episodes in which she did play a leading role go largely forgotten or are remembered for some other aspect or character's part. Such is the case with the fourth season episode Remember Me, or at least I think this is the case. And today we'll find out as we discuss this story that mixes science, philosophy, and perhaps a little bit of romance, and swirls it around in a magic vortex created by Wesley Crusher. It's kind of scary, isn't it, guys?
That sounds kind of creepy, awful. Wesley Crusher's magic vortex yes. that he creates with the Traveler.
Well, yeah. It's a well-known psychological phenomenon that you want to kill your father and swirl vortex your mother. So it's.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. All right. Well, okay.
Freud would love this.
Before we get off the rails in the introduction here, to help us remember me, we're joined by Tyler Johnson. Hello, Tyler.
Hi, everybody.
And Tyler, you're proving that you don't care about sports ball, because as you sit there in Oregon recording this, the Seattle Seahawks and the San Francisco 49ers are playing for a spot in the Super Bowl right now as we speak.
Yeah, that's true, I guess. As far as I know, that's absolutely true.
Explain to me more about this football.
It's sports ball, actually.
Yes. And also here helping us, as everyone can hear, is our managing editor and co-host of To the Journey.
To the Journey!
To the Journey!
There you go. It's Mistress Charlene Schmidt. Welcome, Char.
Hello, hello.
Now, Char, I want to be sure before we start this discussion today that you're not confused. Okay, this is TNG week on the Ready Room. We're going to talk about Remember Me. You did not watch Remember from Voyager to prepare for this show, did you?
Shoot. Wait a minute. Oh, damn it. I knew I shouldn't have had that vodka. God. It's okay. I remember it anyway, I think.
Okay, you think.
I think.
In the intro, you guys mentioned Wesley and the Traveler and creating this warp bubble. I'm just going to get this out of the way up front. When Wesley's working those controls, didn't that seem like it was kind of akin to a kind of a sexual experience for him?
Yeah.
The expressions on Will Wheaton's face as he's working those controls with the Traveler was a little bit disturbing.
Yes, just a little creepy, especially when the Traveler is there across from him and they're kind of phasing in and out. Yeah. Like, yeah, what kind of equations are these?
He even collapsed there at the end. And
like, seriously, get a room in the holodeck.
Was picked up by his mother. Wait a minute. Never mind. I don't know how.
Yeah, and his mother's involved, so that's uber creepy and incestuous. What is this episode really about?
And that would explain the look that Riker gives Beverly at one point in the episode.
Yeah. Yeah, he kind of summed it up with that one little gesture.
As only Riker can do.
Wow. All amazing right.
Well,
acting.
This cannot lead us anywhere good, so let's move on from this.
Hey, you started it this time.
I did. And speaking of me starting things, this is an extremely rare case where I actually chose the episode for the show. Because normally I never Yay. Choose the episode for the show. It's always one of the guests. And I chose this episode and I said that for some odd reason, this is one of my favorite episodes of TNG. And Philip, you said...
That is certainly an odd reason. And I would be would look forward to what this odd reason is.
Right. Because as I said in the intro, I think this episode is largely forgotten. You know, it comes in season four. It's the fifth episode of season four. And we've just come off the whole Borg thing with the best of both worlds. They've come back to Earth for family. Interestingly, the plot of this episode was conceived of to be part of the episode Family. And they go back to Earth, mm-hmm. and family members are going to start disappearing through this vortex. And I'm really, really glad that they did not include this in Family, because not only would it have made the episode too busy, but part of the point of Family is to come back and decompress after what happened with the Borg. And you're not going to get any relaxation if you come back to Earth and your uncle starts flying through a vortex somewhere, right?
I mean, what kind of series would take characters at their worst and at the end of it not give them a relief episode? I mean, next thing you know, they'd be waking up in Nazi Germany with aliens. I mean,
oh. Ouch.
Okay, that's fair enough, definitely. At least Enterprise did give them their own home after the Nazi Germany bit.
Well, and TNG wasn't pushing so hard for ratings, right? I think they were doing okay at this point.
True.
What if they had come back, the Borg cube explodes, then they take a shuttle down to Earth and find out there are Nazis everywhere?
Oh, no.
I'm trying to...
Dun, 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 dun,
I think TNG is one of the few Star Treks not to have Nazis.
It is.
Voyager.
In fact, yeah.
I think you're
Enterprise
right.
Enterprise and original series. I don't know if DS9 ever had.
DS9 did not have Nazis, but they had Cardassians.
So TNG, and... Nazi-free since 1987.
That's right. They should put that on all the packages.
They do. They need to ship that with the new Blu-rays.
Yeah.
And all the other ones can say, now with more Nazis. Remastered.
Yeah, starting with season four of Voyager. Now with Nazis.
No, more Nazis. They remaster them and they put more in there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, true.
The season 7 TNG Blu-ray set will have the special sit-down documentary where the writers talk about how they resisted the urge to write a Nazi episode for The Next Generation for 7 years.
It's true.
Have we talked about the episode yet?
Oh, do you remember? Do you remember the episode? What's it called?
No. That's the thing. Star Trek has this problem where it has titles with remember or forget or unforgettable
or
in
Latin.
Them. But those are the most forgettable episodes out there. Nobody remembers Unforgettable, and I do not remember Remember Me.
Okay, well, that was my question. So to transition here into actually talking about the episode, thankfully Tyler is here to keep us on track tonight, right?
Yeah, good luck, buddy.
So Char, because you just said this, you said you don't remember the episode. And the first thing I wanted to ask you guys was whether or not you remembered this episode when you think back to TNG.
Okay, well, that was kind of an exaggeration. I do remember watching this episode, but it was a long time ago. I mean, we're talking when I was just getting into TNG, which was about age 10, 11. And so my understanding of this episode was really basic, really different from what I got out of it now. But I cannot recall watching it any time in between. So I really didn't remember it.
How about you, Philip, Mr. Earl Grey?
It's Dr. Earl Grey. I didn't go to Earl Grey school to be called Mr. Earl Grey. no, of course, there's Dr. Sci-Fi, so I am Mr. Earl Grey. No, I mean, I remember this episode, and I know we'll talk about it, but a lot of it because of The Traveler. You know, this is part two of the Traveler trilogy. And So yeah, no, I think, I mean, this is just random trivia. An episode that I really don't remember for TNG is Transfiguration. So I just watched that once. That's one that escapes me with John Doe. But anyway, but yeah, no, I do remember this episode. Hmm.
Philip, you just made my point for me from the introduction when I said that people remember the Beverly episodes for other characters. For you, this is part two of the Traveler trilogy.
That's right. So, oh yeah, that's right. This Perfect. Is a Bepisode, right? That's what we call them.
We do now.
We do now. That's now a thing.
Canon Trek.
Trek FM, yes. Tyler, how about you? When I said, let's do this episode, did you think, okay, which episode is that?
So I know that we usually save our ratings for the end, so I'm going to try not to step on it too much. But I would skip this one enough that I forgot some of the stuff that happened at the end. Like it was one that maybe okay. I'd see it on and I'd say, well, maybe I'm not going to finish this one. Or on Netflix, I just skip through the next one. So, you know, it's having watched it again, though, I liked it better than I thought that I would. I think I had a bad taste in my mouth, maybe from the young Tyler who watched it originally.
Well, I remember the last time you watched this episode, you just walked in, looked at your TV, smiled. And then I said, what are you watching or something? And then you walked out. That's all I remember. So.
Yeah.
And then Tyler turned around and then Philip wasn't there.
Never was there.
If anyone hasn't watched the episode, he just quoted the episode. So
that is my favorite
inside baseball.
Because it is so, I mean, and I don't want to jump ahead, but my favorite part of this episode is how everyone treats Beverly like she's not insane.
Well,
that's pretty remarkable.
Not
really.
Everyone, like I said a moment ago, Riker looks at her like you're insane, and
but he's the one.
Well, he's the one. I mean, Data's not going to treat her like she's insane because he's an android and he's not supposed to have that reaction. Wesley finally kind of thinks, yeah, my mom's a wacko, and then of course Deanna is probably thinking, this is the craziest woman I have ever had to counsel, but she can't express that because it would be unprofessional. She's a counselor.
Oh, really? I didn't see it that way at all. I felt like Troy was rationalizing the hell out of this.
That's because she's doing her job, Char. She's trying not to make Beverly feel like she's crazy.
But I would point out, this isn't the real Troy. This is the Beverly imagined, spoiler alert,
yes,
Troy.
Right. Now, so, and this is important
for
a lot of this episode. Picard is the one who really trusts her all the way until the end, which will play into something else I'm going to talk about later, is the fact that this is kind of, in a way, a Beverly-Picard love story, at least from within Beverly's mind, how she sees Picard. But all right, so well, let's go in and talk about Beverly herself. And Char, one thing I wanted to ask you is that, so when we get to Voyager, one problem with TNG, and it's largely a problem because of the time the show was written in the late 1980s, the female characters have nothing really to do on the show, you know?
Yeah.
We've got Beverly and we've got Deanna, and neither one of them really get much in terms of parts in the stories. And when they do, they're typically very stereotypical. And so when we get to Voyager, we have a female captain, we have a female engineer. We have Kes, who I think already was presented as a more capable female character than Deanna and Beverly were much of the time anyway. And then, of course, we get Seven, who's a very strong female character. So on TNG, there are some episodes where Beverly or Deanna get to play the primary role, and this is one of them. And so from that standpoint, I mean, what did you think about this being the Beverly Does It All show?
I loved it, actually. It's not very often that not only does Beverly get something to do, but she gets something constructive to do. And I think this episode does a great job of showing off her problem-solving abilities.
Mm-hmm. Well,
she figures it out by the end. So, hey, good on her. But it's so much better than the typical story that they threw at the female characters in TNG, where it's like the romance of the week or the very minimal supporting role where we're going to see Beverly in sick bay and she's going to, you know, do something on a patient and then that's it. So it's kind of nice and refreshing to see a character that we really frankly don't know too much about getting an episode like this. And I feel like Gates McFadden really sells it. She really carries it because she's alone for how much of this episode? That's really hard to pull off, but she did it. So good for her.
And she's more and more alone as the episode goes along.
That's right. So I'd say that says a lot about her skill as an actress. Yeah. And even though we don't actually get a whole lot of development about Beverly's character, this is still kind of a fun little romp with her. It's a journey. You go along with the adventure.
That's what I do, the journey. That's what I was going to say, which is for an episode that spends the whole time with her, I don't know what we learned about her. I don't know what I know about her now that I didn't know before, except for this weird thing that we'll talk about later where it's all inside of her mind. And so, you know, from a Freudian perspective, what does this all mean? But I was thinking about this and I was trying to think of, like, if I was to make a list of the character traits that she, like, if I'm describing her, and I really, really struggled to say these are the five or six things that really stand out about her as a character. And this didn't change it for me.
Well, I think one thing about Beverly that you don't often see, but you see it in this episode and you'll see it throughout the series, like especially in Liaisons in the seventh season, is that Beverly is a smart aleck. And you really don't see it much because she doesn't get much focus. But like, she basically gives the TNG series Bible in this episode via Beverly Crusher. She's like, Worf, tall guy, never smiles.
Right.
Riker plays the saxophone, likes the ladies. Come on, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, right. That's true.
That's a good point. Yeah. I was hoping you guys would come up with something for me based on that.
Because like in Liaisons in the seventh season, Jean-Luc finds out that she always has a remark that she says in her head every time someone says something, some smart aleck remark. And I think this comes out here in this episode.
Well, she even yells at the computer in here. I'm not talking to you.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it's good.
I was just going to mention that. I love how she talks back to the computer. I'm not talking to you right now.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah, the only thing I really knew about her is she didn't like to be in water, right? Don't put me in water. They'll throw me off of ships. Be very upset.
And that, of course, comes later. Well, let me ask you, Tyler, though, with any of the TNG characters, how much do you learn about them? I mean, the thing, like, I love the TNG characters, but compared to the shows that came after TNG, we don't learn a lot about the characters over the course of 7 years. They're not, you know, we learn a few things like Riker, his career, he wants to be a captain, but he also, you know, he doesn't necessarily want to leave the ship. You know, Picard is very similar. He changes a bit after what happens with the Borg, of course, but there's no, like, in any given episode, we generally don't gain any huge insight, you know, changing moments with the character that tell us a lot about them.
No, I definitely agree with that. The character development was not as strong in that era in general for any show. But I do feel like a lot of the other characters were set up better up front, and then that carried through. I mean, Data, obviously, they spent a ton of time with. Picard, you know, they had to draw him as something being different from the original series, and Kirk especially. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the other characters just got more development. And I think if I can use an analogy to The Wire, you know, The Wire had so many characters to follow. I don't know if you guys watched that show, but and the best ones are the ones that would show up for a minute, do something really cool, and then leave. And I feel like the side characters on TNG were just sort of there. Like, they would just pop in and they'd be there for a while and then they'd move on.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't necessarily get that wow moment.
Mm-hmm.
And to Darren and Daniel, who are yelling right now, I hear you. I think there's actually a lot, because I think the Riker at season one is not the Riker at season seven. The Worf at season one is not the Worf at season seven. Picard and Data, obviously. I would say to a certain extent, you can maybe argue more Geordi. But even Troi, I mean, she starts to go from, you know, sex kitten on the bridge to bridge officer. And then, you know, Beverly, I would say for her, you'd see that her relationship with Jean-Luc does mature. And then you do see, you know, what little we see of her and Wesley, even though I did time it. She did not think about Wesley until the 23 minute mark in this episode.
I know.
Just
right?
In case you don't get a son. That's how long ago.
Awesome.
I even have that in my notes for this episode that finally Beverly thinks about going and talking to her son. Like, at the beginning, she sees him doing something weird, and it takes 23 minutes to think, you know, maybe. Yeah. So, I mean, yes, there is the character development in TNG over the course of the series, but in any given episode, you know, I feel that we generally don't get those stories that are necessarily as strong as we do in the other series. But so, Philip, I did want to ask you, too, being the Earl Grey guy, how do you feel about this episode as a Beverly-centric episode as compared to some of the others where she's front and center, like Sub Rosa, for example?
Right. Yeah, I mean, there was no candle in this episode, so it really wasn't the same. but, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's Transfigurations, which I talked about earlier, is actually technically a Beb episode. I'm forgetting the episode title, but the one where they introduced the Trill. Another Bev episode.
Yeah, the host.
Yeah, the host. There you go. Liaisons, yeah. Bev episode. But this one, and then the one with the quote unquote Irish terrorist, that one too. But for this one, you know, I don't think it's a, she gets an episode, or this is a Bev episode. So I don't think, like you said, it shows a lot, but it, you know, hey, it's good to get her featured once in a while, carry her own. You know, she's not dancing in this one. She's not staging a play. So nevertheless, still good.
Well, she's not staging a play, but that leads to the next topic, which is the fact that this episode really feels like a stage play. And Star Trek does like to cast actors with theatrical backgrounds, which I think is great and is what makes a lot of the episodes work really well. And the casts work well together as well. I was reading something the other day and they were talking, or maybe I was watching a Blu-ray extra, but they were talking about how they... One thing about casting theatrical actors is that the language in Star Trek, the language in the writing, is sometimes kind of difficult to get your mouth around, and they find that theatrically trained actors have an easier time with the language in Star Trek as they're casting and having guests on and such. I thought that was kind of interesting. But this one, from the very beginning, really even when Beverly and Dr. Quaise are walking down the corridor together at the very beginning, especially when Worf arrives at the guest quarters, it really feels to me like I'm sitting in a theater and they're up on the stage and I'm actually watching them do a play instead of a television show.
I got that sense too, actually. Mostly for me, though, it was in the movements and the nonverbal language. I felt like Gates McFadden, especially, you could see her thinking through this and coming to conclusions, but very kind of like bold movements, and just the way that this was directed kind of enhanced that even more, I think. And I got a very theatrical feel that way out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the last act where she's sort of monologuing and finding the answer, like you were saying, Char, you know, I can almost picture the bridge just really at that point. I mean, it still looks like the bridge, obviously, but it almost looks like this is the stage, is the bridge, and she's walking around and figuring it out and talking. I mean, there's the computer, but it's basically a monologue or soliloquy, perhaps. And then we get Bev in the center chair for, I think, probably the first time in the series, you know, in command, ready to do this. So,
yeah, I think the fact that she's, you know, there's so much of her in there as well makes it feel that way, because you feel like you're following one character, where usually with the ensemble thing, there's an A plot and a B plot, and you're bouncing back and forth between a bunch of different people. And then that, of course, that play thing of, am I crazy or am I not, which is sort of a trope.
This is not Will Riker on stage.
Oh, yeah, it's a TNG trope and a play trope.
Yeah, TNG does a lot of those, I'm not crazy, the universe is crazy kinds of stories. And I know Beverly does, she gets at least two really big ones. She gets this one and then Cause and Effect. Am I forgetting any?
Where Beverly goes crazy?
Yeah.
Not that I can
I'm just trying to wonder if she's getting more than her fair share.
I don't think you can ever say Beverly is getting more than her fair share of screen time on The Next Generation.
I'm not saying screen time. I'm saying crazy episodes.
Crazy. I don't think so. Her episodes tend to be more like she's, you know, she's in love with someone, or she's trapped with Picard, and then they're going to talk about their feelings, or she's in love with a ghost, or she's forgetting where her son is.
She's being a bad mom more than anything.
Right. Which, if I can just be that person for a second, I really was paying more attention this episode with Beverly, because I know, you know, Char with Voyager, you know, Janeway always gets, and Mulgrew always gets, like, oh, they played with her hair the whole time. But, like, I actually did notice Bev. I'm like, they actually did play with Bev's hair, like, the whole time, because I don't think it's ever the same, like, every four episodes. I noticed it, especially in this one.
Mm-hmm. It's true. I think they did play around with it a little bit, added maybe a little more curl or something like that. She looked a little more like it. I think they went into a little more detail, made it a little more elaborate, I guess, maybe to feature her that much more. She looked very pretty.
I guess, although Beverly's best hairstyle is in First Contact.
Oh, goodness.
You like her as a blonde?
No, her hair, it's very straight. It's very, that's her best.
That's sacrilege.
I think Deanna and Beverly both look their best in First Contact.
I agree. I don't know. If we're having a hair conversation, I think season 7 Beverly is the
I think
best.
This is going to be the next Trek FM podcast. It's just going to be Trek hair and Trek. We're going to go cover people's hairstyles and all the different shows.
Yes. Hairy Treks.
We're going to call it Follicles of the Federation.
Okay. I like that one too.
Boom.
Yeah.
Next week, we're going to talk about William Shatner's toupee.
We're going to actually interview him. He's actually going to be a guest. The toupee.
We'll have Mott. Yeah. Mott will be a co-host. Yes.
That would be fantastic.
No, if we're going to have a hair conversation, let's talk about Worf's hair. I mean, he really had the hair going in this episode as well. The little time that we saw
Maybe they were giving everybody a little extra mousse.
Well, I noticed
something.
Wesley's hair, too, in this episode. Because he had his little teenage moment of like, oh, when the fake Wesley. And she's like, what's going on, Wesley? He's like, look, there's my research. Look at it yourself. Harumph, I'll be in my room. Stop, 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 stop.
But I like the stage feel of this episode, because it does help you follow what's going on. And because it's all in Beverly's mind here, it's the style in which it's presented, the way that Gates carries out the performance, really helps helps me follow through the story and connect with it.
And I think the challenge, or I would imagine a challenge would be, especially with the bridge, at least the way it looks, and probably I would imagine the way it is on the bridge itself, mm-hmm. or the bridge set, even when it's just her and Picard, or her and Sir Patrick, I mean, to be just two people in this big space, and it's just the two of you who have to fill this space with what you're doing, I mean, that can certainly be an acting challenge of not feeling like naked, because you don't have everyone surrounding you, the usual players.
Yeah.
True. That's actually a really good use of the bridge in this episode, too, I think, because it is so big, you know, almost too big, people have said. But in this case, when you're down only two people in there, it you want it to feel big. You want it to feel like, wow, it's just these two people and that's it.
Who's been saying this, Tyler? What are their names?
It does feel very empty, doesn't it?
What was that, Phil?
I said, who's been saying this? What are their names? Who's been saying the bridge is too big? I got a ready room on the Voyager that they would love then.
And I like it. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it. I've heard people say that, and I thought it was cool. I still remember when it came on. I went, oh, this isn't like the TOS bridge. This is amazing. That's side note, I guess.
Ooh. Standard Orbit, hear that. He said the bridge is not amazing.
Can't please everybody.
Ooh, golly.
Yeah, Philip, you mentioned the ready room on Voyager. I think what happened there is that the bridge was going to be larger, but Janeway demanded more space for her ready room. You know, she had some sofas and things she wanted to put in there. So she forced the engineers to redesign the Intrepid class to have a smaller bridge and a larger ready room.
It makes sense. And then she got her karma retribution when her private dining room got taken away.
She didn't need that anyway. I thought that was ridiculous.
Seriously, the Intrepid class ship is so much smaller to start with. And then the captain's going to get a private dining room that turns out to be large enough for the entire crew to have lunch together in.
No, Queen Catherine Janeway does not need her own private dining hall. I think that was one of Neelix's better ideas, in fact.
I think the Intrepid class is compensating for something. Look, you're a small ship. Just be a small ship and just, you know, be happy with that. You don't have to be, but you don't know not everyone has to be Galaxy class.
It's not about size. It's how you use the space.
It's how your nacelles move, you know.
That's right.
I knew that was coming.
And boy, can they move.
Let's move on to another topic. And we already mentioned, Philip, that for you, this is part two of the Traveler trilogy. We get to see the Traveler again in what I call Deus Ex Traveler, because the Traveler was not planned to be in this episode. It was kind of a last minute addition where they felt like the story wasn't quite flowing, wasn't quite working out at the end. How do we resolve this? How do we let the audience in on what's really going on here? And then we'll talk too about this a little bit more too, because I think you kind of, Enric Berman commented too, that the story is kind of cheating a little bit the way you present to the audience first time around. But anyway, the Traveler does come in here. So he's back. And
dun, 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 dun.
I've never thought of this as like a sequel to Where No One Has Gone Before, but you mentioned that, Philip.
Yeah.
How do you see the Traveler in this episode, and how does it all tie together? And also, how does it impact, as we talked about character development a moment ago, how does it impact Wesley? Because there is something there in terms of Wesley.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and butt in first and then be quiet. Because we were just talking about season one, TNG on Earl Grey the other week. And I think one thing that we were talking about with season one is how many ideas of season one are sequels throughout the entire series. And you have here Where No One Has Gone Before, which is the third or fourth episode off the top of my head of TNG. And then you have here season four, same thing. Because in Where No One Has Gone Before, you had the Traveler introduced. And that was also the episode where Wesley was made an acting ensign. And here we have the Traveler with Wesley as a full ensign. And you still have the Kaczynski's mentioned from Where No One Has Gone Before, mm-hmm. that Wesley's working on Kaczynski's equations. And so you still build on this thing. So a lot of folks who say, like, there's no continuity in TNG, I'm like, here's one of many, many examples of continuity in TNG. And so, yeah, I think, and then of course we'll see the Traveler again in Rumpf, Journey's End, again with Wesley and, you know, whatever, I don't know. But
which is kind of a setup for Voyager.
Yeah.
As well.
Oh, it's a setup.
As we carry.
But
it's a setup, all right.
But yeah, no, I think it's interesting. One thing, and I'll shut up. The Traveler, though, I think was a good character in Where No One Has Gone Before, but I never thought they used him well the other two times he should have, because I thought there was so much more. Like, who is he? Is he like a Time Lord? Is he a Q who's known as T? I mean, who, you know, we never really found out who the Traveler, and I think there was a lot to him. Like, there was a lot you could have done with him, but yeah, so I'll shut up.
No, I totally agree with you. Don't shut up. I like what you're saying. Come on. Yeah, he was not used to his full potential at all in this episode or in Journey's End by any means. He's an intriguing character, possibly limitless in what you could do with him. And then they just, they don't do anything
with
him.
You're talking dangerous. You're too young to be talking about unlimited possibilities.
Oh, really?
That is where the Traveler accost Wesley and Where No One Has Gone Before, and he starts talking about that time and space could be used.
I thought you were
thought.
Channeling Q.
Yeah, I heard he was going to be a crew member in season 10, right? That was the plan.
You're thinking of the Andorians.
In terms of what you're saying, I kind of like the idea that it's – I never thought of it as a sequel either, but there is, again, spoilers. They're in a realm of thought in a way here, right? And that was also what happened in the first episode that he was in, you know, where it was, the things that people were imagining were becoming real.
And then the part where the Traveler steps out and says, "You are now traveling a dimension of time and space. Welcome to the next generation."
I thought it was "Welcome to the Traveler Zone."
Oh.
Yeah, nice. If he had been really popular the way Q was, maybe he would have reappeared over and over and over. And like you said, they would have called him T.
Yeah, he would have had that awkward experience with Sisko and then gone on to Voyager and, tried to woo B'Elanna, I guess.
You know what would be really cool? Is I want to see a villain from their race.
The anti-traveler.
Scary.
The hitchhiker. Yes.
Yeah, he uses time and space to just destroy things and people.
It could have been a sequel to The Alternative Factor, too. Well,
which, by the way, that is another one you like, Chris, for some odd reason, but we're not going to talk about it.
The Alternative Factor?
Yes. You said you liked it once. You were watching it. I was like, why are you watching this? You're like, oh, it's all right. I'm like,
did I?
Yeah. It's on Twitter. It's official. There's records.
Okay. All right. We'll search it out.
Just like anything on the internet. It's true.
It's on the internet. It's true. So.
And then one last continuity. We do get a Dr. Saylor name drop in this episode.
We do.
We do. But she doesn't exist, so does it count?
That's true. She never existed. What are you talking about?
Even her family doesn't know who the heck you're talking about.
That's right. And the other thing we don't get in here is no cetacean ops.
No. Commander Flipper does not exist in Beverly's mind. How sad.
I can see the meeting in there. Like, ask Commander Flipper. Everyone's, who? You know, the guy that makes the squeaky sounds. The dolphin.
You know, I was thinking, and it's not to be random, I was thinking in this episode, because in the beginning you were talking about when Worf and Beverly were talking in the beginning. I was like, that's a pairing we never saw. We never got a Worf-Bev episode. You know, that would have been nice. There was a lot of ones where they match people up and just, hey, go crazy this episode.
Maybe it's because it was such an odd interaction between them. You know, she said, hey, what about this? You know, I forget the exact line, but you know what's going on? And he said, but go on. And then that was it. Like, it was so.
Well, he's being polite. He was like, I'm very mad that someone told me and I'm going to rip their throats out, but please continue.
He was barely containing his rage.
This was my take. This was my take on Worf's reaction was that, okay, I get it, Doctor. Your old senile friend has wandered off somewhere on the ship, and maybe he's fallen down. I'll go find him. It's not like I have anything else to do on the bridge or anything.
Yes. Do they not have first alert in the 24th century? Where he could just
apparently not.
Oh, that would have been great.
Okay, if we're going to talk about Doctor, let's talk about the Doctor. Okay, two things. One, if you're watching this on Blu-ray, because I watched it on Standard, I've noticed, like, especially in later part of the series, I don't know if you saw it maybe in DS9, even to a certain extent, and even Voyager when they went to the changing uniform, but still, you know, we went from that blue in TOS to that blue in TNG, but then we got this blue teal, and you see it like square on. I'm like, was the customer not paying attention? Because Bev and Dr. Quince are both walking, both doctors, one is in blue and one is in teal. I'm like,
well, Philip, this is actually a long-running hot topic on the Ready Room, the whole science blue versus science teal. This, for a long time, I think this was discussed in almost every episode of the show, no matter what we were talking about at some point. Yeah, it is. I think that it came down to two things, that maybe the fabric, when they cleaned the fabric, like the shades would shift a bit. But you're right. There is a very obvious blue. I mean, it's just as pure blue. It's like cyan blue early on. And then by the time you're in DS9, the beginning of DS9, the science uniforms also are the cyan blue, really bright blue. But eventually they completely become teal. It's totally teal. And
that's how I think of DS9.
In this episode,
totally teal.
Right. In this episode, yes, they are different colors. Now, on the Blu-ray, they color balanced it, and they actually match.
Oh, really?
So,
yeah, they do.
Oh, cool.
But yes, it does come off as being two different shades, and I know that drives a lot of people crazy.
Wait, you're telling me they assigned someone to make sure the shades matched, just so fans would be happy?
Not just for the uniform, the color balance of the image itself. Because if you look at the DVDs, for the Next Generation, the hue is very pink a lot of the time.
And he's talking about hue, and the color, not the Borg.
Right, yes.
Yes.
Because that other hue is not
Let's
balanced
call
at all.
Hue. Then he comes out, he's wearing all pink leather, and not that.
And then one last comment about the Doctor. You know, I'm not an ageist by any means. But should like the 80-year-old really be a commander still? He couldn't have made captain, maybe. He didn't want to put in the extra effort, like 70-year career or whatever he had. You know, I don't know.
Well, there's some...
Underachiever.
We talked about this on The Orb a while back. There are those people who understand that commanders have all the fun. When you become a captain, you have responsibilities. And so some guys, they just want to stay commander as long as possible.
That's right. You get to keep the
facial
hair.
And with lifespans being what they are in the 24th century, you get these old commanders.
I get it.
Yeah. So no, I was saying they color balanced the entire the film, the print of the episode, and so those colors do balance out a little bit better now. Well, let's talk about the what interests me most about this episode is this idea that reality is what we make it in our mind, and whether like, does the universe exist and all this world exists and we just pop in and we're going to hear for a little while? Or do our own thoughts kind of construct the reality that we see? And I think on one level, you can say that's true, that, you know, life is what we make of it. We can view things in a positive way or a negative way, and that does influence how we perceive the world around us and the events around us. But here we're getting into the idea, and it's actually explicitly stated by the traveler, that Beverly's thoughts created her reality. And she even eventually, as I said, Shara, when you said she figures it out, and I said, well, eventually she figures it out. Finally, she does realize that, okay, yes, I'm the one trapped in the bubble, and my thought, I was thinking about Jack when Dr. Quace said his comment about, you know, it's one of my favorite lines actually from this episode, is that one of the worst things about getting old is that everyone that you've known all your life is suddenly gone and you didn't take the time to appreciate them when you could. And that is what we're seeing playing out with her, right? That people are just vanishing as time goes on. But what the traveler also seems to imply, because Troy asks him, can't you go into her reality and get her out? And he says, no, I can't go into her reality any more than I can go into her thoughts, because it's her reality. But then he tells Wesley that we're going to create this stable gateway. And then it's like everyone has a shared reality as well on the ship, if you kind of figure out how each person's reality would fit together. How does this all work? You know, are we all in this world together because we all have some sort of shared consciousness and we've all kind of agreed that this is the reality? Or do we all make our own reality and we're all disconnected from each other, but somehow, and this plays into, I'm rambling here, I know, but Beverly, the idea that, and this is the, where you're tricking the audience a little bit. We think we're watching everyone until, I guess it's the fifth act when we finally find out what's really going on. These are all constructs of Beverly's mind. These people are how she views everyone.
That's something I really appreciated about this episode, actually. Having not seen it for such a long time, I didn't realize just how deep you could go philosophically with this episode. Because I remember watching it at, you know, age 10 or whatever it was. All I really got out of it was like the very most basic elements. Oh, yeah, warp bubble, blah, blah, blah. Got to save her. You know, really only on the smallest level did I understand the story. Whereas, really, you could go as deep and as philosophical and as totally tripping as you want, really. You could take it on till dawn. It raises some really good questions, especially with the nice little prelude of appreciate the people around you while you still can, mm-hmm. and all that. I mean, that alone is a huge, huge message. And then the rest of this episode only emphasizes that.
Well, there's a line from one of the great Star Trek movies explains, life is but a dream.
It's a great line.
One of the great movies?
Great or greatest. Wait a minute. I think it is interesting, again, not to go back to where no one, but in that episode you had where everyone on the ship, when they were in this very, I don't know if it's part of the galaxy, wherever the heck they were in that last part, in this strange
land.
Yeah, where they had, yes. Bubble land, yes. Where they had to, and it was basically like everyone think about the traveler, that only by thinking about him and, I don't know, clapping your hands if you believe in fairies or something, but only, you know, if you believe can you get, but, you know, not to make fun, but again, we're here there where just by thinking and by concentrating, you can affect, you know, your reality. Yeah. And I mean, it's an intriguing concept, which of course they've done, you know, again, with computer in program. All right, just checking. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of different from, you know, there's also this idea these days about whether we live in a computer simulation. You mentioned the holodeck. And, you know, for holodeck characters, we have seen some characters who, well, Vic Fontaine is probably, well, he knows he's a hologram, though, which is kind of interesting. But you know, these characters can live their lives out in a holodeck and it's normal life for them. And they may or may not know that they're a hologram, but
Fairhaven,
you know, there's this idea.
Sorry. Get something on my mouth.
Yeah. Good old Fairhaven and spirit folk. But so there's this idea today, of course, whether or not we live in a computer simulation, kind of like a sim city or a sim universe, but This is sort of a little bit different for me because it's kind of on a personal level. And what I try to imagine here, like I said, is if this whole world exists in Beverly's head and this other world exists, what the Traveler seems to imply is like, you know, everyone can branch off and have their own reality and somehow they're separate, but yet they can be connected. The very interesting thing here, though, now, Shar, you mentioned how philosophical you can go with this episode, and Rick Berman commented that this was a very, like, a high concept episode, and he thought that it was a little bit confusing to the viewer. Now, I don't know. I never felt confused by it personally. It feels pretty straightforward about what's going on, but I think that what he was saying is that this was his comment. He said, you're fooling the audience a little, and I don't like to do that. They were looking at one world when, in fact, we were dealing with parallel universes, and that was potentially confusing. Although I don't think they were dealing with parallel universes either. They were just dealing with inside the head of Beverly. And
right.
But the moment for me where what Rick is saying, where that stood out for me was the moment when they're in the conference room and they start talking about Wesley's experiment being the cause of this. Beverly went down to engineering at the beginning and she saw Wesley was doing something and he was busy and she left. Now, she didn't really know what he was doing, the extent of, you know, that there was a problem with it and what happened. So for all the characters in her reality to be discussing this as the cause can't really happen because she doesn't know what happened and the character is a construct of her mind. So where is she getting the information for those characters to be using in their discussion in the first place? Now, it works perfectly fine the first time you're going through the episode, and it's necessary because if they don't do it, you don't have a story because she's never going to be able to unravel this on her own otherwise. But then when you get to the final act and you find out what's going on the other side, when you hear Geordi and Wesley's voice through the vortex and you realize what's going on, then when you go back and you watch it again, you know, you kind of see that disconnect. And so it was a tricky story to put together.
A little bit. I think you get out of it whatever you choose to get out of it. You can go extraordinarily deep or you can go extraordinarily basic or somewhere in between and still enjoy it on some level.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me, talking about tricking the audience, it reminds me of, and I'm going to blank on the Voyager episode title, the one where the whole time we think it's the Voyager crew and we find out it's the copies and they melt.
Oh,
yeah.
Course Oblivion.
Yeah, there you go. So, I mean, that whole time, it's been a while, but the whole time you were pretty much tricked through that whole thing about, you know, who are we watching? Oh, this isn't the real Voyager crew. But
now, Phil, I was afraid you were going to tell us that you were tricked by Live Fast and Prosper. Where the because they didn't really look like the crew members either.
Not at all.
Oh, goodness. Well, I do love the poltergeist effects here in this episode. Go towards the bright light, Bev. But no, I think it is interesting. Though I think for the past 4 years, Beverly will just automatically know Wesley caused the problem. So I don't think it's a big leap. And also that he can solve it.
That's what I thought, too.
That's true.
But no, I mean, it is interesting. And to me, I've been thinking about this in the past few months about a lot of Star Trek, not just Next Generation, but even the TOS movies and a lot that to me, I like if you had to like list, and I'm sure someone has done this, like the lessons that each episode teaches you and even the movies, I would think probably one of the predominant ones is how to deal with getting older. Like that is a lot of episodes and movies in Star Trek is how to deal with getting older, which I don't know. I guess it's a bunch of 20 and 30 year old writers feeling worrying about, I don't know, turning 40, which is not old, but anyway. But I think, you know, yeah, I think it's, you know, Star Trek 2, Star Trek 6, you know, this episode, anyway. But it is interesting, you know, what does it mean when everything goes away and when it's just you and then when it's just you and do you go crazy when you're alone or do you feel lonely or is that where you're best? And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways you can go with this. I agree.
Yeah. I think there's something else too, though, which is if you really want to cook your noodle, trying to, you know, work this out in your head, there's some questions that are really just going to be impossible to answer. Like what if, when that little gateway opened, she pulled somebody else through with her. What would happen? You know, and And even like, how much of the universe was in her head? Because there were stars out there. Does she know of every star in the universe, or was it just the ones she knew the names of that were out there? And so, you know, you wonder if she knows enough about people for them to have their own thoughts in her brain, right?
Jean-Luc, maybe.
Mm. Right.
It's an interesting question. That's a really good question. And it's when she goes down and she finally talks to her son, remembering that he's there and remembering that maybe he did have something to do with this, which of course would have been my very first thought. I'm like, something's not right. Wesley!
So, what experiment went wrong this time?
Right. Are you trying to build a portable tractor beam so you can move your furniture around your room again?
You know, if he had not gone to the academy, he was thinking about this idea if he could get to the warp 10 threshold. Mm-hmm. Never mind.
Oh.
And he could take Robin Leveler with him. Yes.
And they'd have the lizard babies?
Yeah. Yeah.
They might be a little bit cuter.
Yeah, they might be.
Oh, now I can just see the scene.
Same horrible story, though. I don't know where we're going now.
With Wesley behind the field, you know, ears are falling off, and he's yelling at Jean-Luc, I was trying to make you proud. I always did it for you, and the tongue comes out. It would have been great.
Pulls his tongue out and he holds it up. He's now see what you have made me do.
You're not my real dad.
All right. Now, where I was going with this is that she goes down, she talks to Wesley, and then he reminds her about the Traveler and about Tau Alpha C and all this. So what you're saying, Tyler, is like, how much does her thoughts create the reality in the universe? But how much information does she need to personally know? How much of it carries over from the people that she knew in this story? It's almost like if she remembered the person and they haven't disappeared yet, she has access to everything that they know as well until it goes. That's why the computer can answer her questions. That's why Wesley can remind her of this. So your head is literally going to explode if you think about this for too long and try to make logical sense of it. But it is really fun to think about.
I wish she would have brought Riker through with her. Then there could be three Rikers out there.
What would the third one have been called?
I have no idea. that'll cook your brain.
I just want to see Troy's reaction. Yeah. Never mind.
Three Rikers.
And she like looks at her sundae, looks at the three Rikers, and tries to decide which one.
Yeah. I will have all of you.
I love when Picard asks the Traveler, is she still alive? And the Traveler says, as long as she thinks she is alive, she is alive. And Riker says, what the hell does that mean? Like, perfect delivery by Jonathan Frakes.
We just had our Riker episode on Earl Grey, and one thing I talk about Riker is that he seems to randomly yell his lines throughout the series. And this is one of those where, like, yes. Like, what do you mean? What the? I'm like, why are you so angry all the time? What's going on?
But it really works in this case.
This beard itches. Ow.
PC low letter. What does that mean?
I think that, you know, Riker, he wants to cut to the chase. He's not about this beating around the bush stuff. He wants, and he's not going to get all philosophical with the Traveler the way Picard would. He just wants to know what the hell's going on. Be straight with me, T. And he does a hand gesture.
And then he has his three hands. He just goes, whoosh.
Yeah. That's what he wants. So, but... You know, we get back to, and I asked earlier, and I don't think we really got into it, although we talked about the trilogy of the Traveler. You know, Wesley eventually becomes a Traveler. And so when the Traveler comes here and he starts getting into those, what I feel are very Roddenberry ideals here, or Roddenberry ideas, anyway, where he talks about how your species has a very narrow perception of space and time, and you know, space and time, they all work together in a way that you can't imagine. But Wesley can. He sees that in Wesley. And that's how we know, that's how Wesley earned the Technicolor sweater, is that he has this connection with space and time in a way that other people don't. And therefore, he's naturally, by virtue of the nature of the universe, an expert in all three divisions, which of course is what the Technicolor sweater represents. And the Traveler has come back now to prepare him for the eventual transformation into a Traveler, which, again, I don't know if you guys have read the novels, but the novels that bridge the gap between Insurrection and Nemesis, the A Time Two series, Wesley comes back as a Traveler in those books. And so they do carry this through, and it's an interesting way that they ended up using it. But anyway, he is there.
Now, isn't the technical term that he becomes a fellow Traveler?
A fellow Traveler. I think that's a rank within the Traveler continuum. You're a fellow Traveler.
That's right.
You are a master Traveler.
He was wearing red a lot, now that I think about it.
Well, let's talk about one last item here. And I mentioned this at the beginning, that this is kind of a love story. It kind of mixes a little bit of romance in here. The writers danced around for 7 years. They danced around this whole Picard-Beverly relationship. And they only really kind of addressed it once in Attached, where they were forced together, kind of the way Kathy and Coco were forced together in Resolutions on Voyager. And although Beverly and Jean-Luc, they didn't have a monkey to keep them apart, so they actually, you know...
They just had a dead husband.
Yeah, they could just share those things.
Wow. Yeah.
And that gets complicated as well. So
not as cute.
But that's the theme. So Beverly says here that when she realizes what has happened, and she thinks, okay, I was thinking of Jack, and Dr. Quay said this, and then I went down to engineering. I think on the surface level, yes, there's the fact that she lost Jack early in their marriage is something that weighs on her, as naturally you would expect that it would. It weighs on her, and then she dwells upon that if someone says something to her like what Dr. Quay said. But I also really feel like there's another layer here with her feelings for Picard, and also the feelings, his perceived feelings for her, the way that she, I think, maybe thinks that he feels about her too, but they never talk about it. Because Picard and everyone in this reality that she's in, these are, again, as we've said, constructs of her mind. This is how she views these people. And Picard is the one person in here who trusts her all the way to the end. He's the last person who's there with her on the bridge. It's always Picard. When she finally throws herself through the vortex unnecessarily, as she walks up to the vortex and she's thinking like, okay, maybe I should go through here. Next thing you know, she like flies against the wall in engineering. She
and Gates did her own stunts, through, but by the way.
She did, in fact, yes.
Yes, she did.
She did, and then she found out she was pregnant right after. They did this episode too.
We get so too close to the warp core, that thing's going to knock you up.
So what happened? It's all because of the warp core. They had an especially strong mix of antimatter going that day. So when she stands back up, who's the first person that she hugs and is so giddy to see? It's Jean-Luc Picard.
Mm-hmm. By the way, like, your son's collapsed over there. I don't know if you noticed that. Oh, go ahead. Hug.
Right. Oh, Wesley.
No big deal. He'll be fine.
Thanks. You saved me. And then back to Jean-Luc. But it feels so much like the whole manifestation of Picard in her mind is this sort of romantic vision that she has of him.
Well, this is the
everyone else around her.
From my counting, and I may be off, but this is the second time where it has the infamous Jean-Luc, there's something I want to tell you line. I'm blanking the episode name. The one I mentioned earlier, the quote unquote Irish terrorist episode. That's the first time she says that to Jean-Luc.
And that's the high ground.
The high ground. I'm sorry, the high ground. Yeah. And then she does that. So, and that's, I think they do it like three or four more times in the series. That's sort of the running gag. Just at a random crisis event, Bev will be like, Jean-Luc, there's something I want to tell you. And then someone walks in the room.
Yeah.
But I feel like that TNG, unlike Voyager, I think in some ways they basically said, okay, y'all want us to resolve the story? We'll resolve the story. They got married. They got divorced. Okay, done. Okay, that's what was going to happen. Okay, leave us alone.
And they couldn't do that on Voyager because if they'd gotten married and then divorced, they're still on the same ship and then they're going to be really awkward. Bitter. That's no fun. Right. I don't know. And then there's no monkey.
And they would have split the bridge in half. And so.
like a curtain that they pull. right down the middle.
Yeah, between the command chairs, between
she
Kathy's
gets the
chair
Tuvok
and
side,
chair,
he gets the
curtain.
Kim side. You know,
right? Where does that put Tom Paris then? Because
he's
in the middle.
Is he
the mediator?
No, he's hotly contested. He's like the dog. I get Paris. No, I get Paris.
Fine, you get him weekdays. I get him weekends.
One week, you get him the next week. Yeah. Wow.
And then Harry is going, but when do I get him?
Whenever you want. Oh, wow.
And we didn't even mention B'Elanna, his wife. She doesn't care.
The mother of his child.
She's down in engineering. Yes. They can talk on the intercom, both of them. It's fine.
It's pretty good.
Oh, dear.
So, I don't know. Am I the only one who sees the romantic undertones about how Beverly views Picard here?
Oh, no. I totally did, especially with that line, hey, look, there's something I need to tell you. I thought that was a nice
That line's
touch.
Obvious. That's very, very obvious. But even throughout the rest of the episode, it just always feels...
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, come on. When she hugs him the first thing, yeah, hello. There's obviously
something
there.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. You know, you always get like, you know, Picard's all, you know, upper stiff lip, whatever. But I mean, like, he gives her a legit hug in this thing. So it's not like he's like, oh, God, touch. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, he's happy to see her too. So,
yeah, I think you know, there's a... There's something to be said for him being the last one around. I know you said that before, Chris, but everyone else in the whole universe has disappeared except for him. And he says, well, we only need the two of us before to explore the whole universe. So it's kind of like a little fantasy moment there.
That's what I thought, too. Yeah. I thought, is that Beverly's fantasy? It's just her and Jean-Luc on this big ship roaming around the galaxy?
Yeah. It's romance novels in the 24th century right
and,
there.
And I think that... That line may have worked better if at the time that the shot wasn't of like the bridge where you saw like seven empty chairs. I'm like, why would there be seven empty chairs? Are they just like, I'm going to be on ops today. Tomorrow I'm going to be sitting on the con.
Right.
You know.
Musical chairs.
Yeah. Well, you know, you get bored. You do the same job every day for too long. You get bored. You're on a ship. I mean, you can't look for a new job somewhere. So you need to just move around station to station. You spice it up. Keep every day interesting. Yeah. All right. Well, let's close out here as we get to the end. And there's still a lot of things about this episode that I could talk about. You guys are probably surprised we managed to talk this much about this episode.
But well, one thing that you didn't mention that the fact that this is the only TNG episode to make it to Lilith Fair, you know, will you remember me?
Oh, God.
Na, 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 na. Really? I mean, that's, you didn't know that? Okay.
Oh, wow. I'm waiting for the TNG Save the Animals commercial.
That's right. This fish needs food. For only a few cents a day, Livingston can continue to live in the ready room. Or else Captain Jellicoe.
Did anybody keep an eye out for Livingston? Did Livingston disappear at any point?
He got a close-up in the show, by the way, in this episode.
I thought what you meant by that was that it's a Save the Animals commercial, and it's starring Will Wheaton and LeVar Burton. And the animals, the warp bubble represents extinction, and they have to pull the animals through the vortex to save them.
Maybe that'll be the ASPCA ad in the 24th century.
Okay.
Well, Sarah McLachlan will still be singing in the background.
Well, it'd be an android of her.
And at the end, they like open up the barrel, find the cat.
Yeah. Yeah, every day Spot goes through this warp.
Would you like to see another family reunited?
Yes. Every day Spot goes through this warp bubble and comes back.
A different
but
sex.
She's still fertile. Just look at all the kittens that she had in Genesis. She saved the ship. I mean she saved the ship. All right, well, let's close out with final thoughts on the episode. Tyler, and our ratings. Tyler, you said you weren't going to give your rating away at the beginning, so you saved it here. So tell us your final thoughts and your rating.
Yeah, I think, well, it did change a little bit. If you would have asked me, just called me up yesterday and said what I thought or earlier this week, I might have rated it differently. And interestingly, I also remembered it differently. I remembered somehow, like, everyone was going through the portal. Until I rewatched it, and so that it was like, oh, Geordi went through, and then Picard went through, and you know, she was the last one, which is a much less interesting story. It's a little more sci-fi, but it's a little less interesting. So I've upped my rating. I think last week it might have been 3 blue smocks out of 10, and now it's 6 blue smocks out of.
Oh, I thought you changed it
to
teal.
What do I do out of anything? It's just 6 blue smocks.
Very good. How about you, Char?
Yeah, this is better than I remembered it, definitely. It was much deeper in scope and thought, message-wise, than I thought it would be, actually. So I had a good time watching it. I don't think it's an exemplary episode by any means, but Gates McFadden gets to show off her acting chops a little bit. I feel like it's very nicely done for what we are given, and it's not a bad romp. It's a good time. So I think I'm going to give this 7 experiments.
Gone awry.
Wow. I hope nothing goes wrong with them. Yes.
We don't know yet.
How about you, Philip?
This is an episode that is, in fact, in season 4 of The Next Generation. I think there's a lot of, because you're going from family and brothers, and then there's this one. I liked a lot of what was going on. It's not a bad episode, but it's not the greatest season 4. So I give it 4 imagining the possibilities of reality out of an infinite number of imagining the possibilities of reality.
Wow, that's probably the most high concept rating ever given on the Ready Room.
I think it is.
Wait, so you mean I've gotten most vulgar and most... Wow, yes.
Achievement. You're on a roll, Gilfus.
Well, like I said, I chose this episode because it's just always been one of my favorites for some odd reason. I don't know if we actually answered the question of what the odd reason is or not in this episode, but I just enjoy it. It's one that has an interesting concept, kind of a philosophical concept as well as a scientific concept, and mixes them together pretty well. And it has some great lines in here. One was, the computer tells Beverly that there's a flaw in the ship's design as the warp bubble is shrinking. And I'm thinking, damn you, Starfleet engineers, why do you build a ship that's larger than the universe itself? What's going on with you people? So
crazy.
And the fact that the fact that the computer can answer the question, what is the nature of the universe? The universe is a spheroid region 705 meters in diameter. So I don't know.
I always thought it was 42.
It's Wesley's head. I don't know. What is that? But
it's not as big as I thought it would be.
Yeah. So very interesting concepts here. And I'm going to give this episode over 900 missing crew members.
Wow.
Whew. It's a lot.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us today, Char and Tyler. Before we go, Tyler, tell everyone where they can find you if they want to chat you up.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter now. It's a whole new thing for me. So it's Flintastic. So FLYNTTASTIC. Flintastic. And you can also find me under Instagram under that same name.
That's right. And people can find you with me on this week's episode of Warp 5 as well, where we talked about Andorians. And drank a lot of Andorian ale.
Did you have a fight
scene? Yeah, I love those blue guys.
I have to tell people, actually, anyone who's listening to the Ready Room is accustomed to our joke about Andorian fight scenes.
I'll take your blood to Andorra.
For this Warp 5 that we just recorded and put out this week, Tyler went through and found a pattern in all the appearances of Andorians in Star Trek and when they have fight scenes and when they don't. And we reveal all that on Warp 5.
Ooh, yeah, awesome.
There's a message there somewhere.
Teasers, no spoilers.
Looking forward to that.
That's right. All right, Char, and where can everyone find you?
Well, of course, you can find me on Trek FM on
To the Journey. Was that
nicely
lame?
Done. No, it wasn't that bad. Okay. It was pretty good. It only took you about a second.
Yeah, I was trying to be restrained about it this time.
Yeah, exactly. You can find me and Tristan Riddell hosting that show, and we talk all things Voyager. You can also chat me up on Twitter. My handle is OTheProfanity.
That's right. And if we played the uncut version of this episode, everyone will know why.
Bigger, longer, and uncut.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, Chris, it's always great to talk about The Next Generation, but especially this great Beverly episode. And remember, Do I remember? Oh, yeah, Remember Me. Yes, it was a great time talking with Tyler and Char.
You already forgot the name of the episode. All right.
Well, you know.
Okay, so in conclusion on this, do you now have a little bit better idea of why I like the episode or why I chose it? Do you still think I'm crazy?
Well, Chris, you know, in my warp reality, the reason that you like this episode can only be thought of through the realms of possibilities of time and space. So,
and the thread that binds them together.
As much as I can understand any of that. Yes.
All right. Well, yeah, it was fun to talk about. I'm glad we were able to do this episode because I've been thinking about doing it for a while. But, you know, I usually ask guests to choose an episode that they're interested in doing. And I thought, you know, let's just do this one. I want to do this one. I have it on Blu-ray now. It gives me a reason to watch it on Blu-ray. And it was fun to discuss. But it's not the only thing we've been talking about on the network this week, of course. So here are some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Pitching a piece of the action movie.
I think we can definitely say that the Transformers planet doesn't work. They might go for that. Would you go for that, Drew?
I mean, personally, I would shy away from it because then you'd be...
Or would you shy away it would from be, it?
You're a bad person.
Earl Grey.
William T. Riker.
Imagine now if he'd come back with a goatee or mutton chops. We could have been a very different Riker.
Hipster Riker. Number one, are you wearing glasses?
No, it's Geordi's visor.
I'm reading a pad that you've never heard of before.
The Ready Room.
Inside a Lot of Time with Mark Cushman.
But something else that you'll find out in book two is that they almost didn't have Leonard Nimoy and Mr. Spock for season two of Star Trek. His agent wanted more money for Leonard, and for good reason, because when he signed on to do the series, he was supposed to be a supporting actor, and yet he was getting more fan mail than even William Shatner, who was the star of the show, yet only a fraction of the money.
The Orb.
Move Along Home as a TOS episode.
Sisko comparing First Contact to dating girls felt like something that Kirk would do as well, you know, teaching Charlie Evans about girls in Charlie X, something like that.
To the journey!
Voyager on Blu-ray.
I know that there's been some outtakes done because you can find clips of them on YouTube, but there's got to be more. And I want to see them all.
Warp 5.
Andorians on Enterprise.
And so they took this idea where they had antenna, and they took this idea where they were blue and from someplace cold, or I don't even know if they were someplace cold when they were on the TOS, and they just made everything better.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Iris Stephen Bear recap.
I think when you look at the work that was done on Deep Space Nine, what becomes apparent is a group of people who do not feel like they need to do what the original series did in order to accomplish what the original series accomplished.
Melodic Treks.
Apparently, at one point, Patrick Stewart felt he might be able to actually play on screen himself, although it was delicately pointed out to him by Bryce Martin that he wasn't up to that standard quite yet.
Literary Treks.
Peaceable Kingdoms with Peyton Ward.
I don't really remember why I was the one chosen to bat cleanup, other than the fact that I think Margaret, our editor, wanted Picard and the Enterprise E to factor into the final installment, and she had already tapped me to write that story.
Matter Stream.
Star Trek Axelar with Alec Peters and Richard Hatch.
If you've ever experienced war or any kind of conflict where everything is life and death, there's a certain kind of resolve, truth, experience that you come to that I don't think too many people can understand or ever really, really empathize with.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week. And some days we even have two shows for you, and you'll find them in a wide variety of places, including on iTunes, on Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, or you can download or stream from the website. So grab the shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. All right, Philip. Well, it's possible that our listeners may have some comments about Remember Me, And of course, we want to know what you would do if you snuck onto the set of The Next Generation, shot your own documentary. And so the way you can do that is to let us know that is to go to trek.fm/contact and use the form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the Ready Room, and that will come to us by email. You can also send us a voicemail through the website, or you can go to our forums at trek.fm/forums to talk to us and other listeners about the show, about anything in Star Trek you want to discuss. And I'd also like to remind everyone about questions from the fleet. You know, if there's anything about Star Trek that you want to know about, that you'd like to hear us discuss during the news segment, drop us a line on that as well. You can use the same contact form. Just choose questions from the fleet on that form and send us your questions about Star Trek, and we'll talk about those during the news. Now, if social media is your thing, you'll find us in a couple of places. You'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. You'll also find us on Twitter, where we're always tweeting away about Star Trek under username trekfm. And Philip, I have to ask you now, when you're not, you know, trying to find all the people in your life who are suddenly vanishing around you, you know, at the office, wherever it is, you think you're going to have a party, you're by yourself. When you're not searching for them, where can people find you?
Well, they can find me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is North Carolina Kachum Dishkach, otherwise known as NC Public Servant. And there I talk about all things Trek and Who and everything else in the world. And Chris, if people want to talk about what reality they would like to find Beverly Crusher in, where can they find you on the internet?
I think if you want to talk about what reality you would most like to find Beverly Crusher in, I think you need to talk to my co-host from Literary Treks in the Orb, Matthew Rushing. He's the expert on Beverly. But if you want to ask me about it, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. And you can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username, as well as on my personal website at cbrianjones.com. And then on the network, you can find me, as I just mentioned, with Matthew on Literary Treks. That's all about Star Trek books and comics, and we interview authors. And we just had Dayton Ward on the episode that just dropped yesterday, as we're recording this, to talk about Peaceable Kingdoms. That's the last book in the Fall series, and it does focus on the Enterprise E and on Picard. Beverly has a big role in that story as well. So if you've been reading the Fall and you want to hear all the behind the scenes about how that series came together, go over to Literary Treks. We've had all five authors on the show individually and interviewed them about the story and their role in it. So you can get, like, it's like ultimate book extras for the Fall right over there on Literary Treks.
If you still want to get your TNG fix, don't forget Earl Grey with my co-host Darren Moser and Daniel Peru.
That's right. How could you forget to promote Earl Grey, Philip?
I'm supposed to remember something.
Something about this episode. I'm blaming it on Wesley. It's all Wesley's fault. That's why you failed to mention
Much like alcohol, he is the cause and solution of every problem.
All right. Well, so besides Literary Treks, I'm also on The Orb with Matthew. We talk about Deep Space Nine on that show. You can find me on Warp 5, where we talk about Enterprise. And I have my own interview show as well, which is called Matter Stream. And I talk to actors and writers and creative people about topics loosely connected to Star Trek or inspired by Star Trek. Also scientists. I do some science episodes on there as well. So check that out as well if you're interested. Before we go, one more thing we'd like to do is remind you about our sponsor for today's show and ask you to please go over to Audible and try them out. You know, grab Dark Mirror, which we talked about in the news segment today. Grab any other book you like. You can get it absolutely free as a Trek FM listener, and there are more than 150,000 titles for you to choose from in all. There's a nothing to lose if you choose not to stick with Audible at the end of your trial. You get to keep that audiobook. So it's a great way to get a book that you're going to love no matter what. But once you listen to one of them, you're going to want to listen to more. I know you're going to stick with Audible. They've reeled me in. I've been with them for 14 years, so there must be something there. So help us bring the Ready Room to you every week by signing up for Audible and trying it out. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we really thank Audible for their support of the Ready Room and the network. And there is one more thing you can do to help us keep the shows coming to you, and that is to adopt some aliens. We have original alien illustrations by Toba Ushi, who does most of the artwork that you see on our website. We have them as badges and as art prints. You can mix and match, choose which ones you want in which format, and we also have different levels of contributions for you to choose from as well. So go over and pick what's right for you, and your donations help us pay for the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring the Ready Room and all of our shows to you every week. And we really thank you for helping us keep the network going. All right, Philip, I'm going to run down to engineering. I think the turbo lift's broken, but I'm going to get there somehow. And then I'm going to just throw myself through a vortex because it looked like so much fun.
Well, just be sure to tuck in your arms and legs, Chris. But I'm just going to go ahead and stick inattentive mother into that vortex while we're at it, because the Ready Room is done.
Okay, how's it looking?
Well, there was a flash of light, and then Chris disappeared. I don't know what that's all about.
Wait. Yeah, how many people are in this podcast right now?
There were 114 when we started, but now there are only four.
Wait, does it really make sense that only four of us would do this podcast? Does that really make sense? Just four people to talk about this episode?
Well, we've never needed a bigger cast before. All right,
we're getting too carried away with this, guys.
Let me lead us in.